Then Jesus answered and said, "A certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves, who stripped him of his clothing and wounded him and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance a certain priest came down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. Likewise, a Levite, when he arrived at the place, came and looked and passed on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was. And when he saw him, he had compassion. So he went to him, bandaged his wounds, poured on oil and wine, and set him up on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. On the next day, when he departed, he took out 2 denarii, gave them to the innkeeper, and said to him, 'Take care of him. Whatever more you spend, when I come again, I will repay you.' So which of these 3 do you think was his neighbor to him who fell among the thieves?" And he said, "He who showed mercy on him." Then Jesus said to him, "Go and do likewise."
Once again, look to the scriptures as we've just read from Luke chapter 10. Our focus tonight is on this parable that Jesus told concerning the Good Samaritan. Jesus had been teaching. He had sent out the 70, of course. There were rebukes that he spoke to those cities that did not have faith. And as he was in the midst of the people, there was a certain lawyer, we're told, that began to question Jesus. And he asked him that question, a good question: "What shall I do to inherit eternal life?" And Jesus responded to him, verse 26, he says, "What is written in the law? What is your reading of it?" Because here is one who should have known, been very familiar with the law. And the response that he gave is this: "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." And Jesus' reply: "You have answered rightly. Do this and you will live." But he, wanting to justify himself, said to Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" So that's when Jesus tells his parable. Who is my neighbor? He understands that the law tells him you're to love your neighbor as you love yourself. But his question is, who do I have that level of responsibility toward that I have to love that person like I love myself? It's a serious question, and of course the implication is, or the outcome of that is going to be good for some if they are considered your neighbor, but for those that you don't consider your neighbor, as this man apparently thought, there were some people I don't have to worry about. Jesus' response, of course, helps him to understand, though we would question the sincerity of his heart as he asks these questions. He explains to us so that we know and are very clear who it is that would be my neighbor, your neighbor, as the Lord would have us to fulfill this responsibility that we have, as he shows us here. Men are often more readily willing to acknowledge the responsibilities that they have toward God and what we're to do toward Him, because He is God. But when it comes to other people in this world, sometimes we don't always want to have the best attitude. We're not so willing to make sacrifices, to love, as that word really means and indicates. Cain once responded to God, "Am I my brother's keeper? Am I my brother's keeper?" To his own, regarding to his own literal brother in the flesh. Genesis 4 verse 9. We have Jonah trying to avoid taking the warning of the Lord to Nineveh. He didn't want to tell them because of what might happen. There were some who simply had no time for the Samaritans, as the woman at the well, Jacob's well in Sychar, as she said to Jesus, "How is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman?" For the Jews have no dealings with Samaritans. John 4, verse 9. So think about that mindset that the Jews have had. And the Samaritans were no group of people that they wanted to have any dealings with whatsoever. And so some of them, some of the Jews, limited their compassion, their care, their willingness to help to other Jews, people of their same family, you might say, being of the same lineage. But Jesus, Matthew 5 and verse 43, when he reminded them of what they had heard or been taught or what they had believed, "You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy." That was the mindset many of them had. He set them straight. You can see the picture of the mindset that the Jews often have. And so Jesus would answer the question, do I have a responsibility toward other people or just my family, just my friends, just my brothers and sisters in Christ? The Jews had been commanded long before, Leviticus 19, verse 18, love your neighbor as yourself. But then they would try to spin it, who's my neighbor? I don't have a responsibility toward this guy because he is not my neighbor. So Jesus here in the parable of the Good Samaritan, he sets forth a number of teachings that help us to understand the beauty of his ways that are far above the ways of human beings. And we can be thankful that Jesus calls all people to be like him. And if we were in a position to need help, that a person who is a Christian is the kind of person you can count on because they understand the human responsibility. One who is a child of God, one who knows the ways of God, will reach out and help any person who has need. As we study together this evening, we're going to look at several things that are brought forth in this parable, beginning in verse 30, which tells us what happened. And in this one verse here, verse 30, we read about the problem of covetousness, because there were those who were covetous, and these were the ones who brought harm to the traveling man. So verse 30 says that Jesus tells him a certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves, who stripped him of his clothing, wounded him, and departed, leaving him half dead. So this is an account where we read about this individual. We don't know anything about this individual. He's a certain man. Likely Jesus is telling about a Jew who's just simply traveling on his way. He's going, it says, down from Jerusalem to Jericho. And so it says that on this road is where these tragic things happen. And in fact, if we study about the road that long existed from Jerusalem, between Jerusalem and Jericho, it was in fact a place that many problems occurred for travelers. A part of this road was known during those times as the Red or Bloody Way because of the many assaults and murders committed by thieving men, just like in the parable that Jesus tells. There were portions of the road that were very rocky, very steep. There were ravines, deep ravines on the sides of the road. There were places that there were caves where, you know, thieves could hide in and could ambush somebody. And so that was the kind of situation that Jesus is describing and that the people would have been familiar with in those places. So that was Jerusalem to Jericho that's, you know, described here by Jesus. So then these men that come and overtake this man, he falls among thieves, it says, and they do him this harm. They take his clothing. He is wounded in the process. And then he's left there. They don't care anything about him. Of course, these men are described here as thieves. And it's, of course, a problem of the heart, right? People who are of this nature, the thieving person, is one who is concerned about self, doesn't care what his doings or what his wants and how they affect other people. They don't care about other people. That's why they take what they have. And they think nothing of it. Even being willing to bring physical harm. As far as they know, this man, he might be half dead, but it won't be long till he's all the way dead because we're just leaving him here and he has no one to help him. So they don't care about life. They leave him there to suffer on the way and just slowly die. That's the nature of these kinds of people. You see, this kind of heart is a dangerous heart to have. We of course, don't associate ourselves or friends and family with these thieving, murderous people. And yet, the Bible tells us about the disposition of heart we have to be cautious in regard to. Paul told Timothy in 1 Timothy 6 and verse 10, "For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil." These individuals loved money. These people in the parable he describes, and their love of money caused them to seek out to take from this man what he had, to wound him to the point where he's near death, and to leave him there without any help. This is what happened in this case, in this parable, because the love of money, self-centered hearts, don't have much concern for other people in the pursuit of their wants. And that's descriptive of these people here. We, of course, as God's people, need to understand that in no way whatsoever, though we would never go to this degree, that we would never do anything that would bring harm to others or show little regard for the welfare or good of others in our desire to pursue or gain things for ourselves. That would be of the same disposition of heart, though we wouldn't take it to the extreme that these people did. Still, it's sinful and wrong. We read of the description that is given in Proverbs chapter 1, where the wise man, where Solomon is pleading, and he writes here as, "By inspiration, my son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, 'Come with us, let us lie in wait to shed blood. Let us lurk secretly for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol and whole like those who go down to the pit. We shall find all kinds of precious possessions. We'll fill our houses with spoil. Cast in your lot among us. Let us all have one purse.' My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your foot from their path, for their feet run to evil and they make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird, but they lie in wait for their own blood. They lurk secretly for their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who is greedy for gain. It takes away the life of its owners." Even though we understand the primary purpose of this parable is in discussing what exactly a neighbor is, still in this little portion here describing the thieves, we see an important point to be made. We would warn each and every one of us, our young people, be cautious about the kinds of individuals that can have an influence upon you to say, "Hey, join us in doing this particular thing. There's gain in it. Good will come. We'll have this, we'll have that, the other." But if that thing is wrong and contrary to God's will, Solomon says, get yourself far away from such people. Look where it can lead. These were the kinds of individuals who took advantage of this man. And so it is with tragically many people today in life. In various ways, they disregard the welfare of others and bring harm to them in many different ways. Verses 31 and 32 show us a picture of those who are callous. They're callous. Both the priest and the Levite. These individuals, of course, were those least likely to be put in this category, we would assume. The priest. Some accounts indicate that there were nearly 12,000 priests in the city of Jericho. So many would be traveling down this road frequently on different occasions. The priests, of course, had the responsibility of offering the sacrifices on behalf of the people for sin. And they would do all those things regulated by the law of Moses. We might think, well, wait a minute, though, if the priest is traveling and he has duties to do in Jerusalem, if he were to come by and this man looks dead, if he were to touch this man, he would become ceremonially unclean and he couldn't go do his work. So he passes by on the other side. And yet, the verse indicates verse 31, that by chance a certain priest came down that road. So, Jericho is about 19 miles northeast of Jerusalem. If you're looking at a map, you're thinking, okay, he's traveling down, but Jerusalem is about 3,000 feet higher than Jericho. So this priest is coming from Jerusalem. He's coming down, and he's going down. That means he's going to Jericho. So he may have already performed his priestly duties, but in any case, he's not going to Jerusalem. He's not in any need of being concerned about becoming ceremonially unclean, but rather he has an opportunity to do what the law required of him, to lend aid to someone who was in need. The Levite is of the tribe of Levi, but not a descendant of Aaron. And of course, the Levites served the priests in various ways, helping with different aspects of those duties. God's law required many things of people. And we know that there were requirements in regard to the law concerning helping their fellow Jews in times of need, but even others as well. In fact, it's interesting to note, Deuteronomy chapter 22, verses 1 through 4, God required compassion on animals, even if your enemy's animal was in a precarious situation. Exodus 23, verses 4 and 5, you're to help your enemy's animal. But here are these individuals who don't even have the compassion. They're calloused in their hearts. And here is a man who, to them, is either dead or half dead. The Levite, in fact, we're told, actually goes up and he looks at him. He sees. And then he goes by on the other side. Both of them neglect their duty. In Micah chapter 6 and verse 8, the law had said, "He has shown you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God?" Among those key things that God longs to see within the hearts of His people is mercy. People who show mercy upon others and would render aid to people in need. But these, again, were callous men, very insensitive to the needs of others. The law proclaimed their responsibility toward the neighbor, or rather to the stranger in their land, the foreigner. If one, it says in Leviticus 19, verse 33, if a stranger dwells with you in your land, you shall not mistreat him. The stranger who dwells among you shall be to you as one born among you, and you shall love him as yourself. For you were strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. So God says, you need to remember, reflect upon your own history. At one time, you as a people suffered, were mistreated, abused. When the stranger comes, when a foreigner comes into your land, you better treat him right. You better treat him like someone who is born in the country, one of your own fellow Jews. That's the attitude the Lord taught His people. God taught His people through Moses, giving this in the book of Leviticus, a book given to the Levites to show them this is what God expects. But they, clearly here in this parable, were guilty of neglecting the basic fundamental human needs of this man. Then you have in verses 33 through 35 the point concerning compassion. Here comes the Samaritan. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was. And when he saw him, he had compassion. So he went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. And he set him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. On the next day, when he departed, he took out 2 denarii, gave them to the innkeeper, and said to him, "Take care of him. Whatever more you spend, when I come again, I will repay you." So think about the Samaritan people for a moment. We read about the Samaritans, the location that they inhabit in the land, and these were people who were descendants of individuals who had been born to those who were half Jew and half Gentile, basically. During the days of Israel's downfall, after the Assyrians had conquered the land, the Bible tells us that they populated the land with conquered peoples from other places. And remaining in the land were some of the children of Israel. And among those people that intermingled, the Jews and the peoples that were placed there by the Assyrians, came forth the Samaritan people. And they were not considered by the Jews as a worthy people, we could say. You remember the words that we read at the beginning of this lesson. The woman at the well, the Samaritan woman in John chapter 4, was so surprised that Jesus would have anything to do with her, because it was an understood thing that the Jews and the Samaritans didn't have anything to do with each other. And it was, of course, primarily on the Jews' part, because they despised the Samaritans. And so here is a man that knows that the Jewish people despise him, and yet he goes to this man, seemingly one who is a Jew, and he has compassion on him. He's on a journey. He's not concerned about this man and having to deal with this man, you know, affecting him in any way. He's not concerned at all about that. He just sees that man and he sees his condition. And the condition of that man speaks to him, and his heart is moved with compassion to reach out to this man and to help him with his needs. He takes action. He does all of the things that are necessary. He immediately takes care of his needs that are present right there, the wounds that need dressing. He takes the man to an inn. And even though he must depart, he does so providing for the man even after his departure, making sure that the innkeeper does what is necessary so that this man can recover. And when he passes back through on his way through that area again, everything that is needed or that has been used in the needs of that man will be paid for. So he is going beyond what the Levite and the priest even began to thought of doing. And this man is a Samaritan. Jesus teaches a very powerful lesson here that we see concluded in verses 36 and 37. The conclusion is where Jesus gives his question to the lawyer. Which of these three do you think was neighbor to him who fell among thieves? And he said, he who showed mercy on him. The answer is obvious, and the man properly answers that question. And Jesus' words to him are simply those: go and do likewise. The message of the parable is so very important, and of course relates to far more than helping people with their physical needs. You know, people around us who have needs that qualify as our neighbor, we don't have to know them. These two men, the Samaritan and the man who had been abused by the thieves, were total strangers. They didn't know each other. They weren't related in any way, weren't even of the same lineage, it appears. However, when one has compassion, as the Lord has compassion, when he has that disposition of heart that is like unto God, he's not concerned about anything relating to that person, their background, whatever they've done. Even if they were some vile sinner, he wouldn't leave him there to die. He would help him. See, the Christian is one who seeks the welfare of all people. If we had opportunity to help someone in need, if they were someone that was an enemy of ours, or represented a lifestyle or a way of conducting that was so sinful and far removed from God's law, but we had opportunity to assist them and show compassion and help and love, we would be expected to do that, because that's the way of the Lord Jesus Christ. Every man is our neighbor. But of course, beyond the physical needs that human beings will have, we need to see the souls around us that are lost in sin. When we go places in our day-to-day activities and we realize these people are lost, that's where our hearts need to be moved with compassion, see and realize and let it sink into our hearts, these people are lost in sin. I know the way of Jesus Christ. I am a child of God. I'm a part of the church of Christ. And there are so many out here confused. They don't know. They're lost and in sin. Essentially, the devil has them in his clutches, and they are spiritually dead. They're on the wayside there. There's some time and opportunity in this life to reach out and to rescue them, to provide for their needs, to help point them in the way of life eternal. But it won't happen if we are like the priest and the Levite. And all throughout our lives, we essentially pass by on the other side. Being a neighbor means that I'm going to communicate, not just trying to reach the people next door to me, the people throughout my life that I engage or that I get to know or that I just come into contact with and can try to sow some seeds and open some doors of opportunity to begin the process of leading them to the Lord, looking at the souls of people, seeing suffering and spiritual wounds that need to be tended by the great physician. And we are his servants to reach out and to help those who are in need. Do we hear the Lord's message to us in this parable? Do we consider what Jesus has done for us in giving his life and laying it down and healing us? And then he says to us today, I want you to go and do just like the Samaritan did. Care for people. See all of their needs, whether on the outside or on the inside, whether it be physical or the spiritual, and meet those needs. In doing so, we become the lights that we're told about, the salt of the earth, and we honor and glorify God because this, the Samaritan, Jesus points out, lived the way that the Lord wants his people to live. Let's not just simply fill the pews. Let's not simply be Christians in name only, because that's what the priests and the Levite were. They were just servants of the Lord, but not really serving him from hearts that have been truly transformed and changed. That's the danger. But instead, learning from the great Samaritan man here in the parable of Jesus, we see the true nature of being a neighbor. And the Lord wants us to be one to all people. He has certainly been one to us. Tonight, if you're not a Christian, we would urge you to consider your soul's condition. Turn to Jesus Christ with faith, away from your sin. Acknowledge your faith in him and be baptized for the remission of your sins. And live your life each day for him, looking for the various ways that you can serve. Take those open doors of opportunity that Jesus provides and be the kind of good Christian that the Lord would have you to be. If you've wandered from the fold or if you need to be restored to your Lord, if your Christian family here can pray on your behalf for some need that may exist, you know we'd be happy to help you as we stand and sing.